and welcome to Linux Crazy Podcast. This is podcast number 50. In this podcast, you had a real treat. I interview Dylan Pascoe. Dylan is the IT manager for MegaFreight and is responsible for the running, upgrading, implementation, and management of all things system related, from PABX and printers to desktops and servers. MegaFreight is an international freight forwarding specializing in air freight, ocean freight, and customs clearing. When it comes to open source software migration, SA Freight Forwarding Company, MegaFreight has done more than most. Over the years, the company has migrated its employees over to full Linux desktops and open source applications, including OpenOffice, Thunderbird, and Firefox. Over the past couple of years, most of us have heard about companies implementing open source software to the workplace. I, for one, have read many articles regarding the benefits of OSS and how companies are taking advantage of it. However, most of the information was brief and never provided an in-depth look at how OSS was actually being put to use. And also, in his podcast, my friend, Weirded Out, puts a call out for a little help with his hearsay project. Then he gives us a tip about SSMPT. All right, I hope you enjoy the podcast.
G'day, listeners. This is Noel, otherwise known on many Freenode IRC channels as Weirded Out. Thank you for allowing me a moment of your time to make a request that will benefit many migrants who have called my neighbourhood home. I live in the western suburbs of Melbourne, Australia, where in recent times our government have settled thousands of immigrants from the Sudan, Liberia, and other African nations where English is neither spoken or is only spoken as a second language. The non-profit organisation which I represent, known as the St. Albans Community Support and Assistance Program, in conjunction with Grow Church, are combining resources to facilitate an ongoing computer-based training course which will help these people communicate confidently and effectively with all Australians. The software which will be used is specifically designed to help non-English speakers be able to pronounce words and phrase sentences in the unique way that Australians commonly do. Our goal is to accelerate the integration of Africans into our community and hopefully see them get jobs which would otherwise be very difficult. For more information regarding the software, please point your browser to www.hear-say.info, and shortly information about the course and its benefits to the community will also be found at the Grow Church website, www.growchurch.com.au. This is where I can see you guys possibly help to make this a reality. We have the software, we have the facility and the networking infrastructure. What we need are laptops. If you are a resident of Australia and have a laptop gathering dust and would like to see it put to good use, then I would ask you to consider donating it to this worthy cause. The minimum configuration I am looking for is at least a 1 GHz x86 compatible processor, 256 MB of RAM, at least a 20 GB hard drive, and at least one working USB port, and ideally an internal wireless 54G network adapter. We need at least 10 laptops to run the course. I'm happy to organise pickup of laptops within Melbourne and surrounding suburbs, or pay for postage for delivery from anywhere within Australia. For more information, or if you are willing to donate, please email me at noel.saliba, that's S-A-L-I-B for Bob A, at gmail.com, or seek me out on the Freenode IRC server at #LinuxCrazy. Thank you for your time. Now back to the podcast. And today I would like to share a tip about a small, almost insignificant tool that I use to help me monitor all my Gentoo servers. This cool little tool is called SSMTP. SSMTP is a bare-bones sendmail emulator that allows you to send mail from your Linux server without the need to install a full-blown email server. Be advised that SSMTP is not an email server. Instead, it allows you to use an existing email server that you have an account for in order to send email much like an email client. Also note that this tool only sends email It has no mechanism in which to handle incoming mail. So why use it? Quite simply, I use this tool to email log files and system reports daily from my Gentoo servers to my inbox. Each morning after arriving at work, I'll get a nice strong cup of coffee, sit down at my laptop, take a sip, and then scroll through the previous day's log files that my servers have sent using SSMTP. Setting up SSMTP is a breeze. I cannot recall, but it may in fact be part of the default Gentoo installation. If not, just type emerge SSMTP. Once installed, the configuration file can be found in /etc/SSMTP and is called ssmtp.conf. In this file, you set up your mail server and account details. Now, the username of the account from which the email is sent, that is on the server, is by default the prefix for the sender's email address. This being the case, if you are using a domain name that belongs to your ISP or third-party mail service, you might want to make sure you are not using a prefix such as root or admin. This may trigger an alert on the mail server which could cause your account to be shut down. If possible, to circumvent this problem, use a domain name that you own, or better still, send the mail from a user other than root and a domain name that you own. Also, there is no daemon, so don't use it to send high volumes of email. So don't use it to spam anybody. Not that you would, of course. To use SSMTP, create a shell script that pipes the file you want to email through a command line mail program such as mail or nail. Both of these are found within the Gentoo portage tree. The mail program will then automatically use SSMTP to send the email. Once you have tested the script and are happy that it works, simply create a cron job so that the script runs at whatever interval you consider to be necessary to monitor your Gentoo servers. Well, that's it. Thanks, David.
Hello, Dylan speaking.
Hey, Dylan, this is Dave, Comp Rookie 2000.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
Good. How's it sound?
Great. And with you?
Yeah, sounds fantastic.
Good, man. Glad to hear it.
Yeah, we're in luck.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. I've been playing around with, this is my day off, so I've been playing around. I've been learning Python for about 6 months, so I was playing around with that for a while, and I was making, for this Asterisk server, I was trying to send myself an email as far as the peers, which is whichever phones are connected. And so I'm kind of stumped on that. I'm still playing around with that a little bit. So I always get myself in some kind of fix along the way, you know.
Some kind of knot. Well, good to hear. Python is something I aim to hopefully develop in one day, too.
Yeah, I don't know what this is. It's really cheap, and I'm amazed how good the sound is. So it's a long ways away. I imagine it's going over the internet all the way till the time it gets to you, and then it drops down to the, you know, the regular phone line. So
yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, real impressive. There's not even hardly any lag. A lot of times I get some lag. It's kind of a pain in the neck because we kind of will talk over each other. But for right now, this is excellent.
Yeah, good, man. Good. Yeah, no problems this side.
All right, well, I'll go ahead and get started. If we need to take a break, just no problem. We'll just take a break and then we'll come back to it. So.
Okay. Good, Dave. Good.
All right.
Thanks for doing this. It's really interesting.
Yeah. No problem. Yeah. There's a lot of people that listen to the podcast and they get a big kick out of it. A lot of guys, they'll download the podcast and take them to work, and as they're working, they listen to them on their MP3 player or whatever, so they kind of get a little bit of Linux during the daytime.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting for them to hear my accent. I mean, obviously, it's a very different accent to anything they've probably ever heard. So, you know, I think that will be interesting in itself.
Yeah, well, a buddy of mine weirded out that he's I did interviewed him before. He's a system administrator also, and he's from Australia, so it's pretty. It's kind of similar. Seems pretty similar to me, anyhow, as an American.
Yeah, I guess it's closer. It's closer. They're closer to each other than we are to the U.S. I guess.
Yeah, I like your accent. Sounds good.
Thanks, man.
All right. Could you please tell our listeners about yourself, where you live, and what you do for a living, and how you got into Linux and free software?
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me. Sure. I got into open source a couple of years back. I live in South Africa in a beautiful city called Cape Town, and when I was about 16, a friend of mine downloaded a copy of Red Hat, and we were very curious. We didn't have any idea of what Red Hat was, what Linux was, what open source was, but we were obviously very curious, and tried to basically install it, get it running, and get the communications network going so we can get online. I think our biggest goal was to get online. And back then, I think it was Red Hat 6.3 or 6.2, and we struggled a bit, but we got online, and since then I've never looked back. At the moment, I work for a freight forwarding company called Mega Freight in South Africa, and we do forwarding and clearing, and I'm the system administrator or IT manager for them, and basically look after all their systems, computer-related, telecommunications, that sort of stuff.
How were you able to integrate Linux computers into a Windows network?
We, as a company, we don't require very complicated software applications. We don't do any design work. We're not like I mentioned in an article for Tectonic. We're not like a mechanical engineer company where they have to have something like CAD and do design, and there's lots of strain on their graphics card. I mean, we are very, our functions are very simple. So we use basically a browser, a mail client, an office suite, and an emulator. And basically with those four applications, we're able to get all our work done. So switching over to Linux wasn't actually as difficult as it would be for another company. Plus, we had the hardware that was capable of actually connecting via the XDMC protocol to a Linux-ready box. So we switched basically from Citrix over to Linux, and it was a lot easier than we thought.
Explain your process for teaching Linux to people that are used to using Windows.
Like I mentioned previously, we only have a couple applications, and we were actually running Thunderbird on our Windows 2000 server. So the users were already used to Thunderbird, so for them to use Thunderbird on top of a KDE desktop was really nothing new to them, so they got on pretty well with that. Firefox, I think, is pretty straightforward. It's just a browser, and in my opinion, a lot easier to use than Internet Explorer. OpenOffice was a bit of a learning curve with OpenOffice. We had to do a bit of training, things like for example, a comma in Microsoft Office is not a comma in OpenOffice. It would be a semicolon. So, for formulas and basically knowing where all the tools are in the Office application, that was a bit of a learning curve. But we did do a bit of training. We had a couple guys on hand for questions. So it really didn't take too long for our users to get used to it, and there wasn't too much of a learning curve as one might think there might have been.
How many users do you have there?
On Linux, at any given time, we have about 150 users countrywide, but it's split up onto four separate servers. So I'd say just under 50 users per, concurrent users per server.
How has Linux been received by your users and also by the management?
At first, like anything else, I mean, change, people are reluctant to change, so our staff are no exception. So in the beginning, I would say that users were reluctant, but once they saw the benefits, which were speed, reliability, and I think also, you know, when you set it up correctly, the KDE desktop can be very appealing and, you know, very nice to work with. So, you know, at first it was a bit of reluctancy, but once one person enjoyed it and they started helping each other, it really wasn't that difficult at all. We also got a lot of new staff, and our staff are pretty young, straight from college or straight from school. We employ them straight from school or college, and when they come, some of them actually don't have any experience with computers at all. So for them to work on a system that they, you know, they have no previous experience with Microsoft, any system at all, so to them it's actually, you know, they believe that's how computers work and that's how things are done. You know, so actually some of them, when they go to a Microsoft desktop, are asking where the, you know, where the KDE menu is and, and where things like that are, which is pretty, you know, which is pretty interesting. You know, it's a completely different perspective, and I guess, you know, South Africa being a third world country, you know, it's imminent. It's going to happen. Management were 50-50. There are some guys that really helped me along and gave me the opportunity to be able to implement open source. I mean, it is their company. Wayne Lazar was one of them. He's my director in Cape Town, and he's pro Linux. He's very pro Linux, and he was a good helping hand along the way, and so very supportive. Another was Gordon Pascoe up at our head office, and yeah, he was also very supportive. They're both Linux enthusiasts, and so they took it very well. But obviously, you get sort of like the old bulls, who you know, don't really know what it is, don't really care what it is. They're there to do a job, and, you know, they just want to make sure everything works. So it was a bit difficult with them, but overall I think we've done a pretty good job.
Have you noticed that once the people get used to Linux, using it at work, they'll start using it at home?
Correct. We hope so. Yeah. We hope so. We encourage it.
Have you heard any comments from any of the people saying, well, you know, I started using it at home once I started using it at work?
Not really. There have been, I would say, a very few percentage that have, but they're not really computer enthusiasts like you and I or say, you know, in the States, I think the difference is pretty much everybody has a computer, pretty much everyone is online, where in South Africa we still have a long way to go in that regard. So, yeah, not as many as I would like, but there have been one or two that actually said, you know, this is fantastic, I want to try it at home, or, you know, can I download Firefox? I heard it can work on Windows. You know, can I use Thunderbird instead of Outlook, for example? And we've helped them along, and they're using it, you know, as they are at work, so that's great.
Yeah, when we were setting up the interview, you were telling me about the problem with the ISP. I guess it's a monopoly down there, the ISP. Up here, we're so used to just having all the bandwidth we want and getting pretty reasonable prices that I didn't even understand that went on anywhere else, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I spent plus minus 2 years from about 2006 until the beginning of 2009 in New Jersey in the U.S. I was at one of our sister companies doing work there. And I think, Dave, I don't want to lie to you, but I think I was paying $40 or $38 a month to, it must have been Comcast, or Comcast, I think that's how you guys
right.
understand
Comcast,
it.
Comcast, yep.
And I had, I mean, there was no shaping on the internet, there was no restrictions, no bandwidth limits, you know, capping, and the speed was phenomenal. I, as a user, had never seen speed like that in my life. And I think just before I left, Verizon came out with their Fios, which provided something ridiculous like 60 meg download, and depending on how much you pay, I think up to 30 meg upload for $100 a month, which to us is around 800 rand, and it's, you know, we are very far away from seeing anything like that. So it was a big adjustment for me to come back and actually be restricted and not be able to download big files. For example, to download OpenOffice is quite an episode. I would leave something like that running overnight.
Yeah, well, I guess at work you have your own repository set up for everything. So whenever you upgrade everything, you can just do it from one box. Just supplies all the other boxes. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, it's the easiest way to do it instead of doing it over and over again.
Yeah. How many people are in your department?
Well, I would say that I'm the only person that basically stuck around for about 6 years. So I'm the only really person that stuck around. We have a guy that works in Joburg, our administrator in Joburg, and we're getting a guy sometime this month who's going to be the administrator in Cape Town, because those are our two biggest branches. But so that'll be about three. But it changes. I mean, you know, they basically just do the desktop support. And we had a guy working for us for 2 years, but he went overseas. So there's only three of us at the moment. But yeah, I would say it's almost a one-man show at times.
Mm-hmm. Of all the Linux distributions out there today, why did you choose Gentoo?
Well, at first, it was sort of an accident that I stumbled upon Gentoo. You know, I had heard that Gentoo was the fastest Linux distribution. I'd heard that it was very stable, and it was sort of the different distribution out there. It wasn't going along the same lines as CentOS or Fedora and Red Hat were. So or Debian or whatever it might be. So I found it pretty interesting. And the one key factor about Gentoo is that I wanted to learn more about Linux. I wanted to understand it better. And the comments I got back and the feedback that I got back from the community and online was that, well, Gentoo was the way to go if you actually wanted to understand what you were doing with your Linux system. And so I felt that Gentoo, you know, provided a deeper insight into Linux itself. And that's what I wanted, and you know, along with that comes speed and reliability, and also the achievements of back then. I mean, I'm talking about 5 years ago. The achievements of getting Gentoo up and running was a pretty admirable achievement. So I was keen to try it.
Yep, the challenge.
And, it was a challenge. And I mean, once I got it up and running, I fell in love with it. And one of the biggest things actually also was that Gentoo provided the minimal CD download, which is about, I think it's sitting at about 80 megs these days, but back then I think it was actually 56 meg. And so I could actually download Gentoo in half a day, as crazy as it sounds, for 56 meg. But I could download Gentoo and actually get working with it right away. Instead of downloading one of the larger distributions that didn't have a minimal CD. So it was a case of weighing up 700 meg against 56 meg. Although I would, while I was working on it, I would be doing downloads, for example, downloading the stage install, etc. But that just appealed to me that way. And then once I started using it, I just fell in love with it. And, you know, it's simple. Once you get it up and running, they have great tools. They build great tools for Gentoo. They make it fun. They really put a lot of effort into making Gentoo a pleasure to work with. And I think that they provide great documentation online. The Gentoo handbook, I mean, if I didn't have that handbook, I wouldn't have known what I was doing back then. I don't consider myself a guru at all. Just an enthusiast and passionate about Linux. And the documentation online is great. The way they outline the documentation with the syntax highlighting, and the, you know, they really make it a pleasure to work with.
Yeah, I remember my first install I failed the first time, but so the second time I got smart. I printed out the entire handbook, and I went step by step, just like they said. And by gosh, it got installed. So I couldn't take any shortcuts. You know, I was the first time I was trying to, you know, maybe I don't really need this, and maybe I don't really need to do that. You know, or probably I forgot to type it in exactly correct. I think the first time, looking back, after I chirooted, before I chirooted or after I chirooted, I didn't, you know, CD to Mount Gentoo. So when I downloaded the stage, I didn't download it incorrect. And I went through the whole install, and naturally it didn't work. So.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think I did it probably maybe two or three times if I got it working. And it's simple things like not mounting proc before you CH root. And so I agree with you on that one.
What open source software can you not live without on your networks at home and at work?
I would have to say that OpenOffice is one of the biggest open source applications that I make use of, and a lot of other people, friends of mine, colleagues, make use of, and are very pleased with. So I really couldn't do without open source. I mean, the simple functionality of, I mean, sorry, OpenOffice. The simple functionality of OpenOffice being able to export to PDF is a small function that OpenOffice has that sort of makes it worth using over any other Microsoft application. Although these days you do get something like QPDF Writer that you can print a PDF to, and you do get, I see Microsoft Office for the 2007 version of Office do provide a PDF converter, but the PDF conversion is very bad quality compared to what the quality of OpenOffice PDF converter. And it was interesting for us in the beginning that OpenOffice provided the PDF conversion functionality. It was quite interesting to us. We didn't quite understand why Microsoft Office didn't provide that until we sort of saw the how they would lose money by providing a PDF converter into their Office application. So I would say definitely OpenOffice. Firefox, of course. Firefox is a great browsing tool. It's a great browser, and it's used, I think, you know, all over the world. So Firefox, definitely, if you want to do something online. Squid, for example, well, I couldn't do without Squid. I think Squid and Apache work so well together, very simple to understand. And I use that a lot. And, of course, MySQL. I don't claim to be a coder at all, but when I do have to write something and I have to have a database, MySQL is a pleasure to work with.
How much money has your company saved thanks to migrating to open source software, and how does it influence your paycheck or your job security?
Dave, we've never really sat down and worked out the figures, and I think that's because we knew that the saving was going to be phenomenal, astronomical, and we knew we were saving a lot. It was never a case of us having to sit down and say, well, if we go open source, are we going to save, what is the margin going to be? Are we going to save a lot? Are we going to save, you know, how much will we save? We just knew it was going to be a lot. And that is actually also one of the reasons that we went over to open source. We got a quote from Citrix. We had to do a Citrix upgrade for our new Microsoft 2003 servers. We had to upgrade our Citrix, and they wanted something like 2 million rand from us, which for us as a company is a lot of money. And we were turned off completely by this, as well as the licensing cost for Microsoft. If we think about it, we've got plus minus 150 desktop users, and if we had to license them every year for Microsoft and sort of exchange Microsoft Exchange, it would definitely, you know, total a lot of money. So I think we've saved really a hell of a lot. We don't use Microsoft Exchange for our email. We use Exim. We have a great company that looks after our email services by the name of Synac. And they really, in 2004, they approached us when we had a problem with our Exchange database. They just got corrupted and crashed, and in a matter of a day, they had our mail back up and running, and we started using the RMAP protocol, and that's the reason we went over to Thunderbird. And yeah, I think we've saved a hell of a lot of money. Unfortunately, for complicated reasons, it doesn't really influence my salary at this point. But job security is definitely there for many reasons. And I think one of the main reasons is that there's a lack of skilled Linux people in our country. I don't know if it's, you know, so much worldwide, but definitely a lack of skilled Linux people, you know, this side of town.
Sure. And the trust. I mean, they've got to trust you now because you kind of put them out there in the water for a little bit, and it all came worked out. So they've got to have a lot of trust in you at this point in time.
Definitely, definitely. We like a family, I guess. We like a family.
Have you considered moving to KDE4?
I've had a look at KDE4. I really haven't had much time to try and implement it in the everyday working environment. I think KDE4, it's very easy on the eyes. I haven't played much around with it. I do plan to install it and have a look at it, but the you know, at the end of the day, KDE 3.5.9 is providing, you know, it's doing what it needs to do for us. It's functional, it's stable, and we're managing to get our work done throughout the day. So there's no reason to you know, fix something that isn't broken. So we're happy to stay with KDE 3.5.9. But I guess in a year or two, you know, when KDE 4 becomes more stable and sorts out all its bugs, and not that it's hell of a buggy now, but you know, just becomes more a fan in the market. You know, we'll definitely think about moving over to it. I mean, I'm sure it's going to have functionality that is not provided in 3.5.9, and when 3.5.9 doesn't become as community driven and supported, then we'll definitely have to look at moving to KDE4, but not for another 2 years.
Yep. Yeah, you might as well wait. It's working now, so like you said, if it's not broke, why even fool with it?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
Which open source programs would you like to see developed?
It's a great question, Dave. We have been looking for an open source accounting package for the longest time. And funnily enough, an article that I wrote for Tectonic, I got a response from a gentleman who responded about my request for an open source accounting package. But I would really like to see a couple more accounting packages out there, because I think, you know, a lot of people don't think about accounting packages when they think of business, unfortunately, but it's, you know, you can't run a business without an accounting package. So many accounting packages out there are based on Microsoft, and, you know, I'd like to see more done with regards to that, and, you know, more open source accounting packages. I'd also like to see Console, KDE's Console. I think it's a great program. We moved over to Windows. I know that's asking a lot, but I'd love to see Console and Windows. I think I use PuTTY at the moment whenever I'm coming from a Microsoft box, you know, for SSH and whatever. But a Console with its different tabs and so forth, I think it would be great if you can use it on a Microsoft platform. I'm also looking forward to seeing the Thunderbird and Lightning, the calendaring, and the PIM. I'm looking forward to them actually becoming stable, because I think what they're going to do eventually is integrate Lightning into Thunderbird. So when you emerge Thunderbird, when you install Thunderbird, it's going to come with Lightning, you know, built into it. I'm sure with Gentoo you get the option to build with or without, but you know, I think that's one thing that we are also missing on the Linux desktop is a calendar that functions, that integrates with Thunderbird. Thunderbird being such a popular application, we do use Sunbird at the moment, but it has a couple issues. For example, if Sunbird isn't open, then there's no alarm notification, so you don't see your appointments unless you have to have Sunbird open, for example. And there are some applications, plugins or whatever you would call them, add-ons that you can install to get that functionality, but I like to see that built in. So looking forward to Lightning coming along.
Yeah, it'd be nice. Yep. What resources have you found most helpful when troubleshooting within Gentoo or Linux?
Well, easily that has to be Googling and trolling for information. I mean, of course, that's the number one. But apart from the obvious, but also still obvious, I guess, the forums, the Gentoo forums are great. I like the way they work. I like the way they set out. Been there for a good couple of years, although I'm not a very good helper. It always has, there's always great information when you need it. And, I can't think of a problem that hasn't been solved for me online. Obviously, IRC is a great help. Freenode is a great network that a lot of people move their support to. And I think the community support on IRC is great. And, again, the open source company in South Africa that we deal with a lot, Synac, these guys are really Linux gurus. And if ever I really get stuck or if I'm in trouble, these guys really help me out of bonds. So I guess, yeah, it'll be that. The forums, IRC, and Synac help me out a lot.
Lately I use all that, and lately I've been going to Bugzilla. It's the search function is not that fantastic, but if you've hit something that's just started, you can usually find out what's going on there, because a lot of times that's where the developers are making comments and stuff about how to fix stuff. So a lot of times before it even hits the forums, a lot of times you can find out what's going on at Bugzilla.
Yeah, that's good advice. I'll check it out.
What resources have you used to keep up to date with the latest trends in open source software?
I must be honest. I rely very heavily on where you read my article about our migration to open source, Tectonic. They have to be one of the, if not the only, open source sort of online magazine or publisher, and I look forward to their weekly email. It really has all the information. They really have a lot of information about open source and a lot of things going on there. So the editor, Alistair, puts a lot of work into his website, and that's really where I get most of my information about what's going on with open source. And then obviously things like word of mouth, /. In iGoogle, I have a little /. Feed. I find /. Very very interesting, although sometimes it's way beyond my mind capacity. I think they have great stuff on /. And always keeps me posted on interesting things happening online. And then, trawling as well. If you're looking for something, Googling just for whatever you're looking for is another way, because then you stumble across one article, which leads you to another article, which leads you to some new program, and, it snowballs.
Yeah, I found your article. Donnie Berkowitz, which is a Gentoo developer, he has a little feed that he feeds different stuff that's talked about Gentoo, and I happened to look at his feed, and it had that article that you had done about the migration to open source, which that's what got me started trying to get you for an interview.
Yeah, no, great. And Donnie's contacted me since, and he wants me to write something, a little article about Gentoo. So it's amazing how these things sort of get out on the net. And but it's great. I think it's great for open source.
What aspects of Gentoo do you feel the developers and maintainers have got right?
I think you'll agree with me that the stability and definitely the speed of Gentoo is hard to match out there. Recently I had a look at Ubuntu, the server side, and also from the desktop side. But although Ubuntu is a great distribution, it really didn't come anywhere close to Gentoo with regards to speed. And also Gentoo is very customizable, and you can configure it however you like. It's a very personal sort of distribution. You almost make it your own. I think it's other than doing Linux from scratch, I think Gentoo is the closest thing you can to almost building your own distribution, because it does feel like your own when you when you've got it up and running. And overall, I think it's just it's just a great distribution.
Yeah, my install of Gen 2 is completely different than your install of Gen 2 because, you know, we install what we want. Anything we want, we install, and what we don't want, we don't install. So maybe two people that are running Ubuntu, starting out anyhow, it's going to be pretty similar starting out.
Yeah, I know for sure. I think, you know, it's the thing about our installation is that the... you know, the end result is a KDE desktop. So, I mean, KDE, like, you know, can run on, you know, most distributions. So, you know, people don't really know what's going on in the background, but, you know, Gentoo's doing a lot of work in the background and it's doing it well. We had, when I started off, we started off with a Pentium 4 machine with 2 gigs of RAM, and we ran 50 concurrent KDE 3.5 desktops for the better half of 3 years, 4 years. And, I mean, that's just amazing for that piece of hardware. And that just goes to show how, you know, how robust and reliable and you know, how you know, Gentoo just is really a phenomenal distribution.
Yeah, I use GNOME. So there's one way mine would be different. Mine would have GNOME on it, and yours would have KDE. I used to use just Fluxbox, so I would just have Fluxbox on mine and... an A-Term and Firefox and Thunderbird and a few other things. Not much. I usually start out with not too much, and then it seems like over time, you know, you start adding a little bit here and there. But you start out pretty simple at the beginning.
Yeah, you try and keep it simple, but it ends up, you know, when you're testing and prodding and pulling, at the end of the day, you end up with with a million different packages. Yeah. You don't know how they got there.
Yeah, I'll do I'll do an upgrade and an emerge. Dash U N deep upgrade, and it'll, if there's some blockers that come along the way or anything, that's a lot of times stuff will come up that I can't even remember installing somewhere along the line. So naturally, I just go ahead and get rid of them while I'm at it, you know.
Sure,
because you know you're going, like you said, you're going on the forums or you're going different places on the net, and you hear people talking about all this cool stuff, and so it's really quick to install. You just emerge whatever you wanted to try out, and then you try it for a little while, and you either like it or you don't. But it kind of seems like you keep going back to your original stuff that you kind of use day in and day out.
Exactly. I mean, as much as you try, I mean, I try and have a separate, what I've tried to do in the past is have a separate box that I keep as simple as possible, and then have a box for testing. But you know, it's difficult to work between two boxes, and eventually you install something on the box that you're trying to keep sort of clean, and you know, just snowballs from there. The next thing you know, you have two boxes full of, you know, full of 400 applications that you don't need.
What is it about Gen 2 you would like to see improved?
One thing that, and it was towards the end of last year, that I probably don't really understand very well, but I did see it in the Gentoo news, is some sort of shift in you know, the developers or I think Daniel Robbins was the main guy that a couple of people were leaving. So, you know, I lost a bit of faith in Gentoo because I thought maybe, you know, if these guys are all going, the development is going to, you know, there's no sort of... structure within Gentoo, so I got a little bit worried about that, but it seems to have pulled itself together. And you know, having said that, I think that it would be nice for Gentoo to sort of have a better community sort of portal online. And the reason I say that is that so that there can be more interaction, more sort of advertisement for Gentoo. I think that if you're not a developer for Gentoo, it's very difficult to really get involved in the workings of Gentoo. To sort of answer your question, I think that another sort of aspect of Gentoo, which is a little bit frustrating for some of us, is the release of stable packages. One of the things that makes Gentoo such a good distribution is that it's very stable, and they don't release packages if they don't believe that the packages are running well on the box. And if they're going to cause problems, they don't release it until they know they've got it right. You know, they don't put it into Portage. However, there is the where you can, you know, sort of install the unstable, accept the keywords, and install the unstable sort of version of the package, but you don't really want to be mixing stable and unstable. because it can only you know cause problems. So I guess one thing I'd like to see improved is quicker testing and release of stable packages. You know, if I knew anything about development, if I was any good developer, I guess I could help in that regard. So it's easy to say I want to see that improved, but I know they do a great job, and it's very difficult for them to, you know, get that done.
Right.
Otherwise, I think that, you know, there's not much more that can be improved on Gentoo.
Yeah, they call that version bump. What they'll do is, like, if there's something that you want, you test it for a while, and then you put it, like Bugzilla, and then you say you'd like to have a version bump, and then it goes to the developer, whichever developer's in charge of that particular package, and then he can go ahead and bump it up, because it's pretty simple, really, as far as all they have to do is just change the e-build a little bit. I'm no expert, but it's pretty simple to change the e-build a little bit just for the newer version once it's been tested. I don't really understand the whole thing either. They supposedly have testers, you know, that are the guys that are on, you know, are testers.
Beta testers, yeah.
Yeah, but I never hear anything of them. Usually it's users that are going on Bugzilla, and I'll see they'll say, you know, version bump. But they could be the testers, and I don't even know it. You know, that could be it, because there's no real list of who the testers are that I've ever seen. So maybe that's the guys that are actually doing the testing, you know, that are putting in the stuff in Bugzilla for a version bump.
Sure.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about trying to get the other point you made, there's a lot of talk about trying to get the community more involved and making it easier for the community to get more involved. The trustees, which is, they're now opened up the foundation to just regular people, as long as they've shown that they have contributed to Gentoo in some way, they can become a member of the foundation, which it doesn't sound like a lot, but it gives them your voting rights, and plus being a foundation member just kind of gets your foot in the door a little bit more as far as being able to talk to the different developers and everything. What I found is, for me, is to kind of get my foot in the door was just hanging out and talking to them, just mainly just building up a little relationship with them. You know, you talk to them on IRC or you have a problem. And most of them, 75% of the developers I ran into are guys just like me and you. They're just pretty much guys like me and you. Some of them are young enough that they're still in school. Other guys are still working. And they, you know, a lot of them don't have a whole lot of time to put into it, but they do the best they can. So it's a whole lot of people like that put together that is what's Gentoo. There's no real, the foundation is trying to get a little bit more, they can't really get too much more, I want to say forceful, but they're just trying to suggest. I think everything is just suggestions, you know, about ways to get the community closer involved in with Gentoo.
I think that's all they really need, you know, sort of make you feel more welcome. I mean, it goes far beyond sort of this conversation, but I really think that, you know, if they can get people more involved, like you said, I mean, you don't have to be a developer now, which is great news. I mean, I wasn't aware of that, but you don't have to be a developer now to sort of get your foot in the door and to get more involved in, because these guys have so much information and so much guidance, and, you know, they really can sort of, it motivates you to become a developer, for example, because, I mean, you can never have too many developers.
Have you ever considered becoming a Gentoo developer?
You know, like we were chatting about earlier a little bit, that you said you actually, you know, buckling down and trying to learn some Python. I think I've been trying to learn it for about 5 years now. And, you know, just never really found the time just never really made a big enough effort to learn it. But I mean, I would love to contribute in some way, even if it's a small, you know, a very small package that does a very small thing, but a very important thing. I would love to become a developer. But you know, at the moment, my coding skills are very poor, so I would have to buckle down and get involved more with coding. But yeah, I mean, definitely, I would definitely love to become a developer one day.
Have you been involved with any other open source projects?
Dave, not really. You know, in South Africa, I mean, to get involved with open source, basically all I've really done is online, you know. But sort of in my day-to-day life, not really. I mean, we do have, as you know, Mark Shuttleworth. I'm sure you're familiar with Mark Shuttleworth. He's a South African, and he started some initiatives called Go Open Source. and things like that, which I'm not even sure are around these days. I did try and look the other day to see if they were still around, but they were basically an open source initiative that would try and implement open source into, for example, schools or libraries and things like that. But I did try and get involved once upon a time, but it just didn't happen. And so there's no other projects that I'm involved with, unfortunately.
And my final question is again, I get we were talking about this a little bit before, but what suggestions would you have to bring the Gentoo community closer together?
Yes, again, like I said, we were chatting about it before, but one idea that I did have is sort of like a log-on portal where it's almost like you log on to your own little, your own little Gentoo online portal where you can have different sort of little modules. So you'll have a module for your Gentoo installation, what hardware it's running on, any recent problems you had. Sort of like a blog and a portal, and then basically you can link together with other similar Gentoo community users. So, you know, there would be sort of recommendations to say that user X has a similar hardware spec to you and is using his Gentoo box in a similar manner. Would you like to be more interactive with user X? And you would accept that. So, you know, you could get involved with the community could sort of get involved with each other online a lot better, and you have your own sort of space to go and do whatever you like with, and to promote or just show off your the ways you're using Gentoo, and then, you know, get people who are doing similar things to you, and then even branching off into things that you might want to do with your Gentoo box. And, you know, I think it'll be a pretty interesting project if the community can get that together. That's basically my only suggestion for that, but I think that would be very interesting. I think it's a lot of work, but you know, I think it would be a very interesting thing to put together, a sort of an online portal.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah, you could compare your configuration files. You could configure, like, if two guys had the same type laptop, they could compare their XOR config file to see, the differences, and maybe one guy's having problems, and that way you could look at the other guy's file and see, oh, well, this is the reason I'm having this problem.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, you wouldn't have to sort of like the forums where you copy and paste your configuration, and then you sort of give it the coding tag. You would actually have a little applet that you upload all your main configurations, or it's even done automatically. So there would be a little program that you emerge on your Gentoo installation, on your Gentoo box. And what it would do is it would send, for example, your xorg.conf and your rc.conf and your make.conf and whatever it might be straight to your portal. And like you said, the user that has the same sort of configuration to you can, you know, just sort of look at your profile and go through the applets and say, well, let me look at his xorg.conf and let me see what you know, and it would automatically tell you what the differences are. You know what I mean? Things like that. I think it would be pretty interesting.
Yeah, me too. I think it would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Dylan, is there anything I didn't ask that you wanted to add?
No, Dave. I think that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it.
All right, Dylan. I really want to appreciate you for taking the time and come by IRC and say hello. The big problem is with us is our time difference, but Fridays
yeah.
is my day off, so Fridays is a good time to catch me. And Saturdays and Sundays I'm off at I go to work early in the morning on Saturday and Sunday, but I get home by 10 o'clock in the morning. So
what is it that you do?
I'm a golf course superintendent. I take care of one golf course. I have a crew of about between 8 and 15 people, depending on the time of the year. And I've been doing it since I was a kid. Well, a kid, 17. And I just went to school a little bit for it. And but that's I'm 53 years old now, so I'm not ready to take on a new type of trade. That's why I just fool around with this stuff, and I have a lot of fun with it. I've been using Gentoo.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think what you're doing is great. I mean, and thank you for, you know, providing me the opportunity. I mean, I think what you're doing is great. I obviously when you send me the email, I logged on, you know, logged onto your site and went onto your IC channel, and I think what you're doing is excellent. It's very interesting, and we need more people like you out there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I have a lot of fun. I'm like the Gen 2 fanboy around on the podcasting. There's a whole podcasting network around there, a bunch of guys that do podcasts, you know.
Yeah.
Some of them are Slackware guys, some of them are Ubuntu guys, some of them, I happen to fall into the Gen 2 guy.
No, it's great. I think what you're doing is great. I mean, it's interesting because I think you learn a lot, you know, from your different sort of shapes and sizes. For example, I mean, Donnie is an incredible developer. You know, the way, I mean, listening to his podcast, the way he got involved with Gentoo, he sort of had a problem and he sorted it out, you know, out himself. And I think it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're pretty smart people. They're pretty on the ball guys. They interact with a lot of the guys upstream too. You know, as far as they're like the initial testers. You know, I talked to one of the developers, Bonsai Kitten. I did an interview with him. His actual developer name is Patrick, but he's got a box that all he does is just emerges over and over and over and over again. Just keeps building the tree over and over and over again to spot any kind of bugs, you know, and I guess this thing is running, you know, constantly. So they do that. They get all the newest packages, stick them on there, and then just see what breaks, you know.
See what breaks, exactly. Yeah. No, it's very interesting. I mean, these guys, like you said, these guys are bright, you know. These guys are on a different level, and I can really respect and appreciate that.
Yeah. All right, thanks again.
Dave, thanks for your time. I appreciate it, man.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
Keep well. Have a good weekend.
Okay.